פסוק 6. Ki yikorei kan tzipor lefanecha. Listen to this very unusual law. If the word yikorei, crucial to this commandment, if you happen to have come across, we'll see right away the meaning of this statement. If you happen to have come across a kan tzipor, a bird nest, lefanecha baderech, while you are walking, Bechol Eitz, it doesn't matter whether it's on a tree or al ha'oretz or on the ground. Efrochim, whether it's there are chicks in the nest or beitzim or eggs. Ve'ha'em rovetzes al ha'efrochim. And the mother is hovering over the eggs. Al ha'efrochim ol ha'beitzim, over the chicks or over the eggs. Lo sikach. You are not allowed to take the mother together with the chicks or the eggs. So what do you do? Shaleach teshalach es ha'em. Send away the mother. Then ves habonim tikach loch. Then you can take the chicks, then you can take the eggs. And this is a mitzvah. This is a positive commandment. So you have here a negative commandment. Do not take the mother bird because it's hovering over its children. Send her away. And then take the chicks. Leman yitavloch. Listen to what your reward is going to be. Leman yitavloch. You'll have it good. Good things will happen to you. Leman yitavloch. Veha'arachto yomim, and you will have long days. Okay? Now, what would you say would be behind the mitzvah? What is the idea of the mitzvah? Don't take the mother together with the eggs.
There's an element of kindness.
Kindness, right? That's what we might think. I mean, what else can it be? What is the whole idea here? Right? Taking the mother, I mean, sending away the mother, don't take the mother together with the chicks. Well, isn't it that the only logical reason we may come up with is the idea of kindness, mercy? You are having mercy on the mother, that the mother shouldn't see as you take away the eggs, the chicks. Okay? Now. So, the first thing I'm going to show you is a statement in the Talmud. In the Talmud it says the following. It's the tractate Brachot. You know that in the olden days, people used to pray like spontaneously, like you would get up and say your own spontaneous prayer that came out of the heart. So there were certain things that the Talmud, the Mishnah would tell you, you know, certain things you are not allowed to say. Certain things you are not allowed to make part of your prayer. Like, for instance, Ha'omer, if the man who is doing the prayer in public says, Al Kan Tzipor, this is the name of the mitzvah, by the way, Kan Tzipor, the bird nest. Al Kan Tzipor Yagiu Rachamecho. Let your kindness to us reach, yagiu, or be equal to, the kindness that you have shown the chicks or the mother by telling us to send her away. Okay? This is what the Chazan, the leader of the prayer, says. Meshatkin also. You tell him to keep quiet. You tell him you're not allowed to pray in such a way. That's what the Mishnah says. And then there are other two situations that you tell the leader of the prayer, keep quiet, you are not making a good prayer, you are not saying a good prayer. The second thing, if a person says, Al Tov Yizkar Shemecho, which means whenever good things happen to us, we should remember your name. Tell him to keep quiet, that's not a good prayer. See right away the reason. And a third case is, a person who says, modim anachnu loch, And then he repeats it. Modim anachnu loch. He says it twice. Meshatkin also. You tell him to keep quiet. You are not praying according to the rules. Okay, so we have three cases. Remember three cases because it's crucial at the end for the whole understanding of this mitzvah. The three situations. When a person says, let your kindness be like your kindness you show the mother of the birds, you keep him quiet. When a person says, your name should be remembered, the name of God should be remembered when good things happen, you tell him to keep quiet. And a person who repeats the prayer of Modim, you tell him to keep quiet. Now, this is the end of the Mishnah. Now starts the Gemara, the interpretation of the Mishnah. It says like this. Bishlemo Modim Modim. We can understand why if a person repeats the prayer of Modim, it's not a good prayer. Because we believe in one God by saying Modim and then he repeats the prayer Modim, what is he insinuating? Today that wouldn't be a problem because today our ideological struggle is not against those who believe in more than one power. But in those days that was a crucial issue. Do you believe in one God or in many gods? So any insinuation, any hint that there is more than one power was a sign that maybe there is something wrong with you ideologically. Okay, so this is what the Gemara says. This is how we can understand. Modim, Modim, a person who repeats the prayer of Modim twice, we suspect that there is something wrong with him, so therefore we tell him to keep quiet. What about a person who says, let the name of God be remembered in good, which means when good things happen, we should remember the name of God? What's wrong with that person? Easy. Because we are supposed to thank God not only for good things that happen to us, we are supposed to say, Gamzu letovo, right? I recognize whatever happens to us, it must be for the good. Even if bad things happen to us. Meaning, what guarantee do we have? Why do we mean to say that good things that happen in the world, that is controlled by God. But bad things that happen in the world, that's not controlled by God. That's not part of God's world. That's part of an antagonistic power that's taking over the world. That's wrong. There is only one God. There isn't a God for good things and a God for bad things. There is only one God in the world. And this man, by saying, let the name of God be remembered when good things happen, is insinuating that when bad things happen, right, you should blame the devil. Don't blame the devil. Not necessarily. It's all part of one system. There is only one God. Okay? Now we come to what is relevant to us, to the situation when a person says, let your kindness be to us what you the way you show your kindness to the mother bird, that you tell us to send it away. Okay? Says the Talmud, what's wrong with that? Right? There we don't understand what's wrong with such a thing. So there were two opinions. Plegebot reya moro de marovo. In Israel, there was an argument between two sages, Rabbi Yosef bar Abin and Rabbi Yosef bar Zvida. Two sages in Israel had the argument. Chad Amar, one said, Shematil kina b'maasei breishit. You are causing jealousy in the creation, says Rashi. What kind of jealousy? Because by saying, show kindness, the way you show kindness to the mother bird, how come God only shows kindness to the mother bird and not to, to the lioness? Is there a halacha when the lioness is taking care of its little ones that you should make sure not to capture the little the lions when the mother lioness is there? There is no such a halacha. So what are you implying then? That God plays favorites with his creations. Sometimes he's nice to them, sometimes he's not nice to them, right? If you are saying that the reason why God tells you to send away the mother bird is because God has mercy, is a feeling of kindness towards the mother bird, so what are you implying? That somehow the mother bird is a favorite of God and the rest of nature is not a favorite of God? That's nonsense. Do you hear this? And the next one says, there is another reason why there is something wrong with saying that. Why? Because mipnei she'ose midos Tov shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rachamim. Because you are saying that the reasons behind the mitzvos, in other words, the characteristics of God, which are expressed by the mitzvahs that He gives us, Hu Rachamim, it's because of His kindness. The Einon, Elo Gezeros, the will of God, we can only describe as a gzero, a decree. It's not an act of kindness. It's not an act of mercy. It's the will of God, period. It's a gzero. It's a decree. Maimonides, in the Guide of the Perplexed, brings down, quote, these two reasons. And he says like this. Is there a purpose in searching for reasons for the mitzvahs? Is there a purpose for searching for reasons for the mitzvahs? Or should we say, listen, forget it. It's the will of God, don't look for reasons. And he says, here we have in the tractate Brachot, what we just quoted here, 33, we have the argument. In Israel, there was an argument concerning this point. One says, it's silly to search for reasons for the Torah. You'll never find reasons in the Torah. We have to take every commandment as the expression of the will of God. This he quotes, this he interprets in the statement, don't say that the reason why God cared for the mother bird is because God felt kindness for the mother bird. There is no such a thing as kindness in the Torah. There is only decrees, the will of God, period. But we go according to the other opinion. What is the other opinion? The opinion which says, yes, you might find a reason in the Torah, except that when you say that God showed kindness to the mother bird, it's the wrong reason, because then you'll have the question of favoritism. Do you hear this idea? Okay? So if I were to ask you now, so therefore, if we would have to decide, so what is the reason for Shiluach HaKan, Shiluach HaKen, for the sending away of the mother bird? We have no reason, right? Either we have no reason because our reason has been rejected because of the problem of favoritism, or because we are not allowed to think about reasons. Do you hear clearly? Now, Maimonides goes on, just one paragraph later, not too far away, and he says, since we have to search for reasons in the Torah, I am of the opinion, says Maimonides, that we should search for reasons for the Torah. Whenever you find a reason for a mitzvah, it's good. It deepens your understanding. It's very good. Therefore, I will tell you the reason for Shiluach HaKen, for sending away the mother. In order to develop in us a sense of mercy, of kindness for each other. Do you hear this? Doesn't that contradict what the Talmud says, that kindness can be the reason, because then you have a problem of favoritism, why only the mother bird? Do you hear this? Or if you take a look in Nachmanides, the Ramban on this portion, open up to this portion right over here, when he explains the mitzvah of sending away the mother, he will tell you, and what is the reason for it? What did God want? The idea of mercy. We should become aware of His mercy. I mean, isn't this a contradiction to the Talmud? Okay, do you hear the problem here? Okay, now, let's go on to the next step. Why is it that the word used here, the first two words in the portion here, is ki yikorei? The word yikorei, yikorei means what? Makara. Will happen. What does it imply, yikorei?
Chance.
Yikorei is always chance. And that's exactly what the Talmud says. If you ask someone to prepare for you a nest with the chicks and a mother bird, then you have no mitzvah whatsoever. It's only when it happened to be there by chance. Now, that again, very strange. Why should it be this way? Is there more mercy in a nest that was there by chance than a nest that was prepared? Only if you are walking on the road, baderech, and you happen to have seen a nest, then send away the mother, that's all. But if it's prepared, there is no more mitzvah. Now, how does that fit? What reason? What rationale can you give for that? Prepared, okay? Another observation. The reward which is mentioned here by this mitzvah is extremely unusual. There is only one other mitzvah that you find a similar reward, that you a good Yitavloch ve'arachto yomim, it will be good for you and you'll have live long days. You know by whom it's mentioned such a thing in which mitzvah? Kibud avoim. Kibud avoim. Here in Deuteronomy, in Parshat Ve'etchanan, in chapter 5 of Deuteronomy, in chapter 5, verse number 16, Tetzayin, it says, Kabel et avicha vetimecha, etc., etc., lemanitav, etc., yarichu yomecho lemanitav lo. Now, what's the connection between honoring your parents and sending away the mother bird? So it's interesting. The Talmud says the following. Kabel et avicha vetimecha, honoring your parents may be one of the most difficult mitzvahs in the world, in the whole of the Torah. As a matter of fact, the Talmud in Kedushin tells us that it's an extremely difficult mitzvah to fulfill. Right? That you have to become aware of the needs of your parents and care about them. It's a very, very difficult mitzvah. You know which one is the easiest mitzvah to fulfill? Shiluach HaKem, this one. You don't even have to prepare it. Right? It's something that you happen to be there, you just shoo away the mother and you fulfill the mitzvah. What can be easier than that? So the Torah takes the most difficult mitzvah and the easiest mitzvah and tells you, you see, you get reward for the great mitzvah and for the little mitzvah. Okay? But again, what do we see? That the Talmud notices the connection between Kibud Av V'Em, between honoring your parents and sending away the mother. Then we have an extremely strange story in the Talmud in Chulin, right at the end of the tractate, the last story in the tractate Chulin. Listen to this. It's Kuf Membei, the last one, you can't go any further. 142. It says like this. You know there was a man called Acher. Did anybody hear of this sage called Acher?
Yes, he witnessed the event of Shlomo HaKam.
Exactly, exactly.
And he was a sage. As soon as he saw that, this is in Kedushin also,
isn't it? Right, right. It is in Kedushin, but with less, I mean, with less details.
Right.
Yes, you're right, yeah.
And, he sees a man going up the ladder to shoot the bird.
He falls on me, he just goes up, it's more. He sees the father telling his son, go fulfill the mitzvah of sending away the mother. So what can be better? A man who goes to fulfill both mitzvahs, that the Torah adds to those mitzvahs that you live very long. Right? So what did he do? He went up there. What better guarantee do you have for long life? And as he was doing that, fell to his death. He became an apikoros. At that moment he says, that's it? So where is the guarantee of the Torah? I stopped believing in it. That's what he says. What was his mistake? Well, says the Talmud, his mistake was that he gave the wrong interpretation for the statement that you will have long days. Long days doesn't mean in this world necessarily. It means be olam shekulo oruch in the next world. Because there is no reward, there is no physical reward for mitzvahs in this world. The reward for the mitzvahs that are described in the Torah are rewards for the world to come. That's what Omar Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, Il mole darshe acher lehai kro. If acher, if this sage would have known the real interpretation of this verse, he wouldn't have become an apikores, he wouldn't become an unbeliever. So, this is not a coincidence that the Torah uses Shiluach HaKen, the mitzvah of sending away the mother, as a mitzvah that caused the abandonment of Torah by one of the sages of Israel. It's the only case we have that a sage of Israel abandons the Torah because he questions the justice of God. Where is the justice of God? Okay? This is, and it's associated with Shiluach HaKein, with the sending away of the mother. Obviously, it's not a coincidence. What is there in Shiluach HaKein, in this mitzvah of sending away the mother, which is associated with this idea of justice? Right? Now, it's interesting that in this portion, we have another place where a very similar word to yikorei is used. If you take a look at the end of this portion, we have almost a repetition of the word yikorei, but it's the same verb, but in another tense. If you turn to the end of the portion in chapter 25, the last three verses, specifically in verse number 18, Yudchet, the last two verses of the Torah in this portion. So let's start with the verse before. Zachor es asher asah lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Baderech betzeischem mimitzrayim, when you went out of Egypt. Remember what he did to you. What did he do to you? Asher korecho baderech. What is the meaning of the word asher korecho baderech? He what? He happened to be upon the road. Asher korcho, loshon mikra. It happened to be that he met you. Right? And you take a look in Rashi. What does it mean, asher korcho? Loshon mikra. It just happened to be.
By chance.
By chance. By chance. Right? It's only by chance. Now, why is that significant, that he attacked you by chance or he attacked you by design? Why is that so important concerning the attack of Amalek? Right? Isn't it strange that the fact that he happened to have come across you, that's significant. Right? What's the connection between Amalek and the idea of he happened to have come across you?
Well, Amalek always operates by chance. Whereas a Jew is supposed to operate, nothing is coincidental as far as a Jew is concerned.
You're right. You're right. Chance is the essence of the Amalek ideology. That's what chance is. A belief in chance. He believes, he has a very intense belief that everything happens by chance. Everything is a coincidence. What is the opposite of the belief in chance?
Determination.
That everything is supervised. Everything is not necessarily predetermination in the sense of exact. That everything is predetermined and there is no free will, but everything is supervised and everything is cared for. Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence, individual divine providence, is the opposite of Amalek. As a matter of fact, Amalek represents that belief that things just happen without any sense of fairness or justice. It's a belief in chance. Where else do we find this idea that Amalek means chance? Haman. Haman is who? Who is he a descendant of? Haman. Amalek, right? Amalek. When he decided to wipe out the Jews, how did he do it? How did he decide upon the day? Drawing lots, right? What is the idea of lots, drawing lots? Chance. That's the idea, chance. And that is the essence of Purim, the idea of chance. He drew lots. That's the whole idea of Amalek. So it's not a coincidence at all that it says, Asher korcha baderech. He met you, happened to come across you, which means he brought upon you this ideology of everything happens by chance, there is no fairness, and there is no justice. Things just happen by chance. Okay? Now, we believe that things don't happen by chance. However, starting from Purim, things may appear to happen by chance. This is why Purim is such a crucial holiday by us, because it starts a whole period of history, which is a specific name by us. Remember the name which the Torah calls it, the Talmud calls it, the period of the hidden face. When God's face is hidden, Hester Panim, God's face is hidden. What does it mean that God's face is hidden? That things happen in this world and you say, how could it have happened? You don't see God directing the world because God is hiding the face. He doesn't want you to see that he's directing things. So he may make things appear that they happen by coincidence, and you really have to search for the hand of God, because on the surface it will look like pure chance. Do you hear this? This is the reason the commentaries say why the Megillat Esther, which is the book describing what happened on Purim, you don't find once the name of God in it. You don't find the name of God. Why don't you find the name of God? Because the events on the surface were just accidental events. One led to another, just chance. You want to see the hand of God? Search for it. But on the surface, from that point in history on, after the destruction of the Second Temple, we are starting the period of Esther Ponim, when things happen by coincidence. Yeah. You mean, right, and I was Purim, we don't say Hallel. Right. Now, the period pre-Purim is a period of Gilui Shechina, it's called. When the presence of God, to one degree or another, was seen. Okay? It wasn't completely apparent, completely obvious, but if you wanted to, it wasn't difficult to see the hand of God, like the Talmud says. If you came into the temple during the period of the first temple, you did see extraordinary things, supernatural things, that they couldn't be understood unless you believe in God's direct intervention. Okay? Now, however, the poison of that doubt of the possibility, maybe there is no God, maybe there is no basic justice in the world, maybe things do happen by coincidence, who poisoned the mind of the Jews? Amalek poisoned the mind of the Jews. The poison finally worked at that period, after the destruction of the first temple. But that poison was caused by the encounter between Amalek and the Jewish people. As a matter of fact, in the Parsha, where it describes the war, the actual battle between Amalek and the Jewish people, this is Parshat Beshalach in the book of Exodus. The last verse of the Parshat Beshalach, chapter 17 of Exodus, Yud-Zayin, it says the following: Vayomer ki yad al keis Yud-Kei. The name of God. The name of God is usually what? Four letters, Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, right? Here, the name of God is broken up. It's only Yud, and afterwards a Hey, Yud-Kei. The Vav and the last Hey are not here. Says the Talmud, why, when it's describing the war against Amalek, it's missing the last Vav and the last Hey? Because the name of God is not full, it's not complete, as long as there is the poison of Amalek in the world. When will it be that Bayom Ahu Yeh Hashem Echod Ushmo Echod? What is the Shmo Echod? That will put together the Yud Hey together with the Vav and the Kei. That will be that day, in other words, in the Messianic period, when all the full name of God will be united. But as long as we are not in the Messianic period, the name of God is broken up into two parts. Okay? Now, what is the meaning of the name of God being broken up into two parts? The Yud-Kei is on one side, the Vav-Kei is on the other side. Again, it means exactly the same thing. It means that events in this world do not point on the surface to the unity, to the fact that there is somebody supervising. It's as if God is up there, like taking a nap, and here he lets things happen just by chance. That's the way it looks. When will we recognize that it's all one? That God is awake and taking care of us, by Yom Ahu, when the Messianic period will come, we'll recognize that everything has been supervised. Okay? Now, we can start putting things together, and we'll see a certain pattern here. What did the Talmud say? What's wrong with saying that the kindness that you have shown towards the mother bird, says the Talmud, you shouldn't call it kindness of God. You know why you shouldn't call it kindness of God? Because if you call it kindness of God, I'm going to ask you a question. What about everything else that happened in the world where we don't see that kindness? Remember? Now, This is the classical question of the doubter. For instance, he will say to you the following. What do you say when something good happens to you? Oh, thanks God. Let's say, for instance, you made an investment and it went well, right? Or you met a girl and it was the right girl. So you say, thank God. In other words, what are you saying? It's God's credit. What about the next door guy? The guy who made the investment and he lost all his money. Or the next door guy who married the girl and it was the wrong girl. What about him? Is it also God who's caused him to break to meet the wrong girl and to make the wrong investment? Is it? It is? Also, you are saying then that God is playing favorites here. So God is not so kind after all. He's kind to some people and not to all. So then what's the alternative? Okay. Then it must be all chance. All chance? You mean to say that you don't believe that God supervises and directs what happens in the world? So which one is it? Which one is it? Let's decide. The moment we say that we thank God for something good that happens to us, right? We have to recognize the consequences. What about all those people that aren't as lucky as we are? It's not God who is intervening there. I'm really not expecting an answer because we have no answer to the question. We have no answer to the question. We live with the question. The question is a reflection of some distortion in the relationship between God and the people. Of course, we blame ourselves for this distortion. This distortion that causes us to see things as apparently unjust. That's part of this hesterponym. It's part of that God covering his face.
What about God allowing what good merits you deserve through your good deeds? Whereas the bad guy, he's not maybe punishing him, but he's not going to allow the good merits because he doesn't have any. In other words, if I do good deeds, if I'm doing mitzvot, then God will allow the merit to come to me.
In other words, you are saying that ultimately you believe that there must be a system. That's what you're saying. That you're absolutely right. But can you describe the system? Can you answer the question in rational words? Why is it that some people are lucky and some people are not? Some people marry the right girl, some people don't. Some people are healthy, some people aren't. Can you answer the question? You can't answer the question. You have a belief, the ultimate belief that I know that ultimately everything makes sense. Fine, that if you are a loyal Torah Jew, you will say that I have a belief. But will you say that you understand it? Ridiculous. Nobody understands the system. Abraham didn't understand the system. He asked the same question, Ashopet kol haaretz lo yaseh mishpat, I just don't understand it, says Abraham. Right? So, to one degree or another, we all have the same question and we all lack the answer. Okay? But the fact that we have to live with a question, does that mean that when something good happens to us, we should not say, thank you, God? Because by saying, thank you, God, it will arouse certain questions for which we have no answer? What do you think? So therefore, we shouldn't thank God? We shouldn't thank God when we say, who knows, saying, lechem lechol bosor, he gives food for everybody. And at that moment, we say, yes, but there are people in Ethiopia who are starving. Oh, so I won't bless God then. And that's ridiculous. So why is it that there are some millions of people in Ethiopia without food and I have plenty of food? Why is it? Why does God let it happen? I don't know. There must be a reason. I don't have an answer for it. I believe that there is a reason, but I have no answer. But the fact that I have no answer for it, and I see the world as God playing favorites. I do see that God is playing favorites. I believe that, of course, it's only appearances. Ultimately, God does not play favorites, and there is a system which is definitely just, but according to the appearances, isn't God playing favorites? He definitely is. But should that stop me then from thanking God? No, because ultimately I do believe in the ultimate justice. Do you understand this paradox that I have to live with? Okay? Now, basically, Shiluach HaKein, the sending away of the mother, expresses the randomness of kindness, of mercy. That is the essence of it, the randomness. We ask the question, why is it? It's only if you happen to have come across the nest. Why only when you happen to have come across? Because the whole essence of the mitzvah is kindness, which is perceived in the most random manner possible. Right? So now the question is, can we say the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen, the mitzvah of sending away the mother, shows us the system, that God is kind? Doesn't show us the system at all, just the opposite. It brings out the difficulty of the system, like the Talmud says, because it's bringing out the randomness of the system, apparently. It's bringing out the fact that God is playing favorites, apparently. So, in the ultimate sense, I have no answer. So don't stand up there and say that you know the reason for the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKeid. The ultimate reason nobody knows, because the ultimate justice nobody knows. But in a personal way, right? When something good happens to you, in other words, the mother bird, is the mother bird the recipient personally, not as part of a whole system that clarifies the system as a whole, but in a personal way, is the mother bird receiving the mercy of God or not? In a personal, small way. Same way, for instance, if we are healthy, should we thank God? Or should we say, no, philosophically, I can't thank God for my health because they are no, I know a lot of people who are not healthy right now. What should be my attitude? Personally, I'm still thanking God. And my overall uncertainty as far as the philosophical approach is concerned has nothing to do with my own personal approach to God. Therefore, remember we asked the question, if the Talmud says that you can't generalize from the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, it's wrong to generalize. Because by saying that you understand everything and everything in the system of God works with kindness, so we are supposed to tell him, keep quiet. You don't know what you are talking about, that you understand the system of God. Nobody understands the system of God. That's absolutely correct. But in a personal way, of course, personally, the mother bird is receiving the mercy of God. Personally, when something good happens to you, say, Baruch Hashem, thanks God that it happened to me. Now, this is now why the Talmud uses this particular mitzvah as the cause of the apikursus, the abandonment of Jewish belief by this sage. As we said, of all questions, of all mitzvahs, why is this mitzvah associated with the abandonment of belief? Because one of the greatest struggles that a believing Jew must go through is this particular problem, the problem of the apparent injustice in this world. This Acher wasn't able to overcome this struggle. He lost the struggle. But how is this struggle with the injustice of God vis-a-vis the justice of the individual relationship between God and man, how is it expressed in the mitzvah of sending away the mother? This is it. Because of the question, what do you mean kindness to the mother bird? Are you telling me then that you have discovered the system of how God acts to his creatures through kindness? Ridiculous! Look around you. Where is the kindness of God towards the Ethiopian people? Right? In other words, if you see it in a personal way, then of course you have no problems whatsoever. If you see it as a generalization of the whole system, that's ridiculous. Okay, that's what we're trying to say. And this is why there is a connection between Amalek and the word Korcha, which means he happened to have come across you and you happen to have come across the Kansipor, because the whole idea is the randomness of God's kindness. You know, it's from our perception, the kindness of God in this imperfect and distorted world of ours, that we caused the distortion of the world, where do we see kindness? In random places. We can have a great tzaddik suffering, and we can have a wicked person having a great time in this world. What does it do to us? It shakes us up. It shakes us up. It creates questions. But we have to live with this paradox. This is the lesson of Shiluach HaKein, that we have to live with the apparent randomness of the individual kindness that God shows to some of his creatures. We have to make peace with the thought that on the appearances, God plays favorites in this world. We believe that he doesn't. We believe there is a perfect system of justice. But we can't deny that on the surface, it seems that God plays favorites. Okay? This is the idea behind the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. Now, if we say that Shiluach HaKein, the sending away of the mother, is the most random of the mitzvahs of the Torah, like it just happens to come across, and it represents the randomness of God's kindness or the apparent randomness of God's kindness, what would you use as an example of the least random of God's mitzvahs? The mitzvah that makes sense to everybody. Honoring your parents. They brought you into the world. You owe them something. The exact opposite, which means this is the other side of Shiluach HaKein. Shiluach HaKein represents God playing favorites, and honor your parents is the most non-favorite playing of God. In other words, everybody's equal. Everybody's equal because everybody's supposed to honor their parents, and everybody's supposed to honor them when they have children. This is part of the real system. Okay? So again, the Torah chooses the least random of the mitzvahs, the mitzvah that expresses the least randomness, and the mitzvah that represents the highest degree of randomness. And it tells you, you see, in our distorted, imperfect world that we live in, both have to be the same to us. We have to realize that both mitzvahs are equal to us. Even though one mitzvah creates enormous philosophical, theological problems. Like the Gemara says, what do you mean? God is playing favorites with a mother bird? It doesn't matter. We Jews have the capacity to live with these paradoxes. We can live with questions, but with ultimate beliefs that we know the answers will eventually come about, will eventually get the answers. Of course, when will the answers come about? When this state of randomness will be overcome. Who represents the randomness? Amalek. When is the point when Amalek will be overcome? That's the Messianic period, when everything will become clear. And it's interesting. The symbolism of the Messianic period is always daytime. Sunrise. The symbolism for the Galut, for exile, is always darkness. When it's dark, you don't know what's going on. You look around. You can't see anything. You can't see anything in front of you. Everything is dark. So what do you do in darkness? You believe. You don't see anything. You believe. This is what the commentaries say. We say twice a day, Hashem Elokeichem, emes. It's true. God, that's true. That's absolute truth. But what we add right afterwards differs in the morning and in the evening. What do we say in the morning? V'yatziv, v'nachon, v'kayam, v'yashar, all synonyms that mean what? It's an established fact. Of course, Hashem is truth. What do we say at night? We don't say v'yatziv, v'nachon. What do we say? V'munakolzot. At night, it can only be a belief. You can only believe. Because when it's dark, you have to live with doubts. You have to live with questions. It can be v'yatziv, v'nachon. You don't know. You don't see it. You have to believe in it. But when the morning will come, then everything will be v'yatziv, v'nachon, v'kayam, v'yashar. Everything will be clarified. Everything will be clear. Amalek will be overcome. The name of God will be unified. Oh, then everything will make sense. But until that point, we have to live with a state of mikre. So it's interesting. The Midrash Rabbah, you know, there's a Midrash Rabbah on this portion, makes the following statement. Be careful with the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird. Because by fulfilling this mitzvah, you are rushing in the Messianic period.
Why be careful?
What?
Why be careful?
You know, it's when you're walking by and you see a nest, don't just walk away and let be careful to do it. On the surface, what is the connection between Shiluach HaKein and rushing the coming of the Messiah? That's the whole idea. The whole idea of Shiluach HaKein is becoming aware of the problems of the exile, the problems of the darkness we are surrounded, the problem of the unanswerable questions that we have, and our deep desire that these unanswerable questions should eventually be answered will bring about the answer. And the answer can only come in the Messianic period. This is the meaning of the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. Okay, any questions? Yeah, stop here.